Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 3rd of Tevet. And today we're going to see probably two brief responses, one from the Chatam Sofer about a bracha that we make on a certain kind of grain. So part of the problem with tshuvot like this, responses like this, you have to know the realities that he was talking about. He refers to something called tirkashavites, which when I look it up online, it's translated as Turkish wheat, and then when I try to find what Turkish wheat is, it seems like Turkish wheat is maize, meaning corn. Because when Christopher Columbus went to America, sailed the ocean blue, as it were, he brought back corn from the New World, and it spread in certain places. And Turkey was one of the places that spread. Turkey is still a major producer of corn, although it produces more wheat than corn. So in Chatam Sofer, Volume 1, Or HaChaim Siman Nun, he was asked about if you make bread or other cooked items from a flour out of this kind of kitniot, right? So, and in the place where this person writing it, this was what they ate. In other words, it's a very corn-based society. In that society, corn dishes and corn baked breads and corn food were very much what people ate for their food. Therefore, the person writing the question to the Chatam Sofer wants to know if you make a shakalia b'dvaro, which we make on general foods that don't have another bracha, or a bori pri adama, because after all, corn is grown in the ground. And the problem with corn grown in the ground, though, is that you're mashing it up into a flour, and you're making it things, right? You're making a cornbread, you're making a corn pudding, whatever it is. So when it's mashed up, that's a problem in terms of bori pri adama. And the person asking the question had noted that the Magen Avraham in Reish Chet, the paragraphs you'd bet and you'd gimbal, I talked about it, and we'll get to it. We'll get to Magen Avraham later in the responses, so we'll leave it for that. This is from, by the way, the 3rd of Tevet of Tav Kuf Pei Vav, which was 1825. This year that I'm recording this, the 3rd of Tevet is already going to be in January, but that's a strange occurrence. It's a very, very late year. It's among the latest years ever that you in terms of comparison between the Jewish calendar and the non-Jewish calendar. So anyway, so he's still in 1825 and 1826, even though it's Tavkuf Pei Vav. He's asked about corn. The man who asked him the question knew some stuff about the corn. So the Chatam Sofer begins his response by saying that it's clear to the person running the question that you wouldn't make a bori mei mizo note. Right? Why is that so clear? You make a wheat of it. So if it's a wheat of it and people are nourished by it, it's their basic food. So Bereimi Nei Mizonot sounds like a bracha you make on that which is zan, that which gives nutrition. So here, this food is Mezon Zayin Tuva. It gives a lot of nutrition. It's what people eat. And people make their meals on it, right? If you think about, there's another halacha that doesn't come up in this tshuva, but the halacha is if you're koveya seuda on certain things that are ordinarily be mizonot, so there are cakes you might have, or there are breads that are called mizonot breads, but if you make your whole meal on them, so even though they're made with the flour is sort of lighter and fluffier, or has more sugar in it, or more of other ingredients, so therefore it's more of a cake than a bread, if one is koveya seuda on, if one makes it the anchor of their meal, then those things generally should get a hamotzi. So here, he's not suggesting a hamotzi, but he's saying that if you can imagine that if you have this thing that you grow in the ground and you mash it and turn it into a flour of sorts, and then you make a meal on it, why should that at least be a bori mei mizonot? So the Chatam Sofer says, you're probably right about that. The reason you're right about that is that it happens to be Talmid Rabbi Yonah in Brachot. Talmid Rabbi Yonah is a commentary on the Rif printed in the back of Brachot. It is, just as a trivia matter, a commentary on which I wrote a master's thesis when I was getting a master's in Jewish history about the fact that people think that it's Rabbi Yonah writing most of it, but really that the Talmud, who I think was a man named Rabbi Solomon Ben Soria, writes some ideas of his own. In any case, different lifetime, a different version of myself. So, Tzuri Rabbeinu Brachot in Brachot Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph says, and he's the source for the Magen Avraham, that Orez and Dochan, which are rice and millet, I think we commonly translate them as, but again, one of the examples where knowing the specific translation of these things becomes very important. So, on both of them, the Gemara seems to see you make a bari mei mizonot. And Rabbeinu Yonah adds, "V'hu adin nami l'chol davar sh'achlo l'meizan." I'm sorry, but you know, first says you make it even if it's a masek deira, meaning even if you don't mash them into a flour, you make a bar mitzvah on them, because they're just a bar mitzvah. And if you're eating them, you'd make a bar mitzvah. That's where we get the custom to eat, to make a bar mitzvah on rice. And then he says, and that would be true for anything that's mezon. So Rabbi Yonah's theory seems to be, that whatever food is used as an anchor of nutrition, as a mezon item, it really gives nutrition, it would be a bar mitzvah, even if it's not technically one of the five grains. But, says the Chatam Sofer, we don't actually paskin that way. That's not our ruling. Our ruling is to follow the Rif and the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, that Dochan doesn't get a bar mitzvah. Dochan, which I think we translate as millet, and is like a lesser form of rice, it's not a real rice, that we don't make a bar mitzvah on it. If we make a dish out of it, even if we mash it into a flour, we make a shachkol yabivaro, and if there's still pieces of it visible in it, wasn't mashed up to completely, we make a bar piyadama. So that seems to show that even though there is an opinion in halacha that we follow what gives nutrition in terms of brachot, in conclusion of halacha, the way that the consensus of the Rishonim went and of the Pesach and of the ruling of halacha went, was it's not true. There are five grains. There's rice, which we'll get to in a moment, because the Chasam Sofer is going to come back to rice in a second. There's five grains, there's rice, and there's everything else. And everything else, even if it becomes a staple of one's diet, doesn't matter, and everyone can make a what looks like a flour of it, that won't affect the brachot issue. That's the way the Chasam Sofer understands the Pesach of the Rif, Rambam, and Shulchan Aruch and Rambam. That it's not a matter of nutrition, it's not a matter of what becomes the center of a meal. It's a question of what has, this is his phrase, chashivut lechem, the quality, the importance, the standard of bread, v'chiyuv chala v'chimutz, and the obligation to give chala, the obligation to give challah if one makes it into a bread, and that seems to be from the Mishnah, only the five grains of wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt. And then the obligation, and then whether it's chimutz, meaning whether it can become chametz for Pesach purposes, whether you can make it into a matzah, because to make something into a matzah, that's something that if you leave it, it can become chametz. If it can't become chametz, it can't become leaven, then it can't be a bar mitzvah. That's the standard that we eventually adopt. This becomes, I think, complicated in our times in terms of what defines chimutz and what defines leavening. That's a whole discussion of its own. In any case, there's a Tosfos in Erevin that says that anything that doesn't have the chashivus of the importance of becoming bread or of being able to be machmitz, being able to be really leavened, then it doesn't get a bar mitzvah, which is different than orez. And the reason why orez, why rice is different, because you have a Mishnah Chal, and this is why, again, I think we are confident that that what we refer to as orez in the Mishnah of the Gemara means rice. But that's a very important factor, because now we're seeing how much it affects. It affects all, so many different areas of halacha. It affects the bracha, affects the mitzvah of challah, it affects the mitzvah of Pesach, of both chametz and matzah. So the Mishnah Challah says, if you make a mixed dough, and the dough has some wheat and some rice in it, and you mash them up together to make a dough, so the Mishnah says, "Im tam dagan chayav bechala v'chimutzo karet." If it has the taste of wheat, now you can get the taste of wheat with less than a majority of wheat. Ordinarily, we might think in mixtures, in a Torah level, on a Torah level, that mixtures, that the whatever the majority of the mixture is what defines the mixture. But in the case of this issue, the Mishnah doesn't talk about, and this leads to all sorts of cautious questions about whether we go by majority or by taste. The Mishnah says if it has the taste of the wheat part element to it, then already it's considered like a wheat bread, even though it could be majority rice. And if it becomes chametz, someone eats it on Pesach, they would get karet. And they have to give challah, even though rice is required in challah. And the Yerushalmi, the explanation for that, this is what the Chatam Sofer tells us, the explanation for that is that the chitim are goririm ha'ores. The chitim draw the rice with them. They can make the rice into, as it were, a sort of bread, even though, so, and then the Chatam Sofer says that it's only ores. Because if it was a question that the wheat is so strong that it can draw things along with it, then you could have said, if I make a cornbread, many, many cornbreads, as it happens, have some wheat in them, because if you make a pure cornbread, I think it becomes very, it doesn't hang together that well, it becomes very crumbly, and it starts to make into a real bread. I've seen it, I've tried it, we went somewhere, we bought some cornmeal, and I tried to make a cornbread. If you don't put wheat in it, it's much harder. There are cornbreads without wheat in it, but it's much harder. So let's say I took corn or millet or any other, you know, a thing, and I mixed it with some wheat. When they made it into a bread, it had tam dagan, it had the taste of dagan. This halacha nonetheless doesn't apply. Why does this halacha apply? Chassam Sofer says it's because rice is special and that rice has a certain leavening quality of its own. Let me just pause a second because there's a few details that Chassam Sofer threw in that I skipped over. He points out that the Rosh, the name of the Ramban, and also the Shulchan Aruch sounds like they think it's only rice. And the Maggid of Rum there held, however, that there has to be at least a minimal amount of wheat. The minimal amount of wheat he gave is you have to have a kezayit b'kedei achilas pras. A kezayit b'kedei achilas pras basically means it has to be at least, I think, 1/8 wheat. Because the way you figure, it depends on the Machlokas Rashi and Rambam about how much a kezayit is compared to a kebetza. But a kezayit b'kedei achilas pras is what we talk about when we say to combine an eating, to be considered one act of eating, you have to eat in a certain minimal amount within a much longer time. So the time we take somebody to eat a pras, which is a half a bread, where the whole bread would have been, pras means half, would have been, I think, a kav. So I think it's 1/8, 1/9, because a kav is 9 times a kezayit, or 8 times a kezayit, depending on whether you're Rashi or the Rambam. So you have to have that much wheat in that period of time. In other words, for the Maggid of Ram, you're basically eating enough wheat within a kedei achilas pras to get a kezayit of wheat, and that's why it counts. So for the Maggid of Ram, it's not so much about the rice, but the Chatam Sofer is not impressed with that. The Chatam Sofer says he thinks it's not true. He thinks that if you follow the Mechaber and the Ramban, it's only ores, because if that were true, if the Maggid of Ram's theory was that the wheat is what's doing it, then it should be true of cornbread and any other kidney or any other, you know, grain-like thing that you're going to mix with wheat. But it sounds in the halacha, and this is where the Chassam Sofer assumes the halacha is, that it's only wheat. So it may be that you need to have it's only rice. It may be that you have to have a certain amount of wheat for the Maggid of Ram in order to be able to be liable for Chametz and Pesach, as he'll say, for all that, the rice gets sort of converted, as it were. Can't make a chiv kares. It can't make you liable for eating chametz and Pesach just because you had rice. So it's got to be the wheat. But even if that's true, the Chatam Sofer is going to say, but it's only rice that can have this interaction with wheat, and that's because rice has a certain amount of chimutz power and a certain amount of leavening power on its own. Now, it's true that a pure rice bread, a pure rice flour, doesn't have sufficient leavening in order to qualify for challah, you know, for having to take off challahs, where you take off an extra bit when a person bakes a flour into turns it into dough and bakes it into bread. So at the dough stage, you're supposed to take off a little bit and give it to a kohen. We today, because we're living outside of Israel and because we're all tameh, we don't give it to kohen. We don't know who a kohen anymore for sure. We don't give it to kohen. We burn it. But there's this mitzvah of challah that applies to things that leaven, that are become chametz. These are connected halachic areas. So it's a reminder that halacha is very often more intertwined than we think, because an issue of a bracha to make is connected to halacha about Pesach and what qualifies for chametz and or matzah and Pesach, and also links to issues of challah and when we have to take challah from, we have to take a special tithe from certain doughs, that all comes together. So the Chatam Sofer says the reason why orez, why rice, will get the parimin mizonot is because it has a certain amount of leavening power. It's not enough to qualify for challah and chametz, as I said, but if it's mixed with wheat, even if there's very little wheat, or relatively little wheat, meaning less than 1/6 wheat, less than 1/8 wheat, such that Maggid of Ram could imagine this halacha applying, and the Chatam Sofer seems to assume that this halacha really theoretically applies even at lower levels of wheat, it mixes with it and can create that. But other species of wheat, of wheat-like material things, like a quinoa, let's say, or corn, or whatever other legume, whatever kidney oat there are, so they, even though they might give nutrition, so people can develop a diet centered around those things, and they can make them the center of their meal, let's say potatoes would be another example, since they don't really machmitz, they don't come to full leavening, you never make oberim minim mizonot on them. So all of that is his long way of saying that he agrees with the question of that the issue here will not be whether you make oberim minim mizonot. So the question therefore turns into, but along the way he's educated us a lot about three different areas of halacha, about brachot and chametz and matzah and about kala, and reminded us that orez is seen, that rice is seen as having special qualities. Now, if you allow me to pause in the Chazon Zohar for a second, I will say that I recently heard somebody speak about sourdough bread, who made claims about how leavening works and the necessity of yeast for these things, and if you don't use yeast, how you have to do it, and all those kinds of things that make me wonder about if we were today to have a Sanhedrin to re-examine these issues, this question of leavening and what the status of rice is and how it is or isn't special. I think that scientists and Torah scholars would want to have discussions about this, because I'm not sure that we today think all the things are exactly true, and that I think there are scientists who would say it. I'm not saying we should follow them. I'm just saying I think it's an interesting question to re-examine. I think there are scientists who would say that rice is not as special and unique in compared to the other five grains, and there are other grains that are close to being equally qualified. I think it would be an open topic for halakha to re-examine at some point if there were an authoritative body that wanted to do so. But this is the halakha as we have it now, and that's the halakha that he's thinking about. So when it comes to this Turkish Shavite, which I think is made with just corn, he says, so it's no doubt that it's either a shehakoldiya bivaro or a bor piha adama. So he says it's simple and obvious it should be a shehakoldiya bivaro, because you have a gemara in brachot that says that even if you make a bread out of orez and dochan, you make a shekoliya bivaro. So in terms of orez, we just said, we say it's a bar medium as a note, because in fact the orez could be drawn along with wheat and turned into a more leavened thing. But with dochan, which I think we translate as millet, another kind of grain-like plant that produces a bread-like flour, you know, a flour-like bread, dough, and all that, we say a shakol on it. If we say a shakol on that, then there's no reason to think the Turkish Shavites is any better. It's not better than rice for sure, because you might think, well, it's got to, you say corn is better than rice because we make cornbread. So the Chatzam Sofer says, we know of people in the Sea Islands countries, and I think he means Japan, or it's certainly true of Japan. Maybe he doesn't mean Japan, but he means someplace in which their whole diet is based on rice. So if you have a rice-based diet, it's the same thing. So don't tell me that just because you can create a diet centered around corn, it must be that corn is even better than rice. And it, meaning the argument would be, and if only the Chazal and the Mishnah and the Gemara knew of corn, they would have made it better than rice. They would have made it a Borimian result even more so than rice. He says, not true. The only thing about rice that makes it special is that it can leaven in a way that corn does not. And without that, rice too would have been a shock on the Ebivaro. But it's not quite as clear as it could be, because Tabina Riniona, and this one I think is accepted halacha, when he's talking about a bread made out of kitniot, so let's say a potato bread, for example, that we treat as kitniot, or a millet bread. I just looked it up. According to Wikipedia, millet is a group of highly variable small-seeded grasses widely grown in the world as cereal crops. That's the word I'm looking for, right? Various cereals that you might think of as being close to breads, but nonetheless, they're going to be shehakol. So Tamir Ibn-Yonah says there are two reasons why a bread made of cereals, sorghum is another good one, millet, triticale is a hybrid of wheat and rye, that's probably one of the five grains in halakhically, and then there's something called fonio, which are grown as food crops in Africa. In any case, sorry for the digression. Ibn-Yonah says that breads made of these cereal kinds of things are shehakol for two reasons. One is, meaning it's not a mizonot, we've already said, because it's not of the five grains the Gemara talks about, the Mishnah talks about, and it's not rice, so it can't be borei min mizonot or habotzi. So once it's not those, it's got to be shakol, he says, because first of all, you can't see the original fruit. It's been mashed out of existence. That's why, for example, a really mashed up applesauce, some applesauces would have pieces of apple still in it, and that would be a question of what bracha you make, but most applesauce, it's just a mash, and therefore it's a shakol. That's one reason that applies here as well. When you get the bread out of these items, you don't have any of the item left over in the bread. You don't see pieces of that thing left over in it. So for that purpose, then Turkish Shavites, maize, would be the same thing, because when you make a cornbread, you don't see the pieces of corn. But then Rabbi Yonah gives another reason. The other reason he gives is, that hanato va'achilato shehu kishehu pri, that it's really an item made to be enjoyed when it's in its original state. It's not something that's meant to be turned into a bread. It's meant to be enjoyed in its original state. And now that it's no longer its original state, we're not using this in an original way, and therefore it changes bracha to a lower level of bracha. Now that second reason, says the Chatam Sofer, he's not sure why that's an accurate reason. Because, for example, there's a tradition that if you have spices that are ground up, we make their original bracha if we use them in some way, right? If you're going to eat them in some way or use them in a way that they get their own bracha, you'd make their own bracha, even though they're mashed up. So the original pri, the original item, the original fruit, the original grown object is not there. So it must be that it's because you don't eat them in their original form. You only eat them or use them by grinding them, and therefore that's the pre-shelahem. That's the fruit. That's the thing that they were grown for. Whereas it comes to kidney oat, where we generally eat them, we often eat them cooked without having ground them up. So for a lot of people, eat just corn, right? You'll have canned corn, you'll have corn on the cob, you'll have corn take off the cob and cooked it up in something. So if you just do that, then that's what gets a bari priya adama. So then when you mash them up, even though you make them into a bread, they lose their bracha. And the Magen Avraham has a comment that makes it sound like that's true as well, that when we smash things up, so that would mean that when it comes to Turkish Shavites, which people only... Oh, I'm sorry. So corn, we eat corn that way, but the Chatam Sofer, if Turkish Shavites is maize is corn, people where they're writing him from only ate it ground up, right? I mean, it would be like that kind of thing, meaning people don't often eat wheat. Wheat is obviously a barbarian, so no, people don't often eat wheat on its own. So where the person writing the Chatam Sofer was talking about, they also didn't eat this Turkish Shavites, this corn on its own. They only ate it once it had been ground into a flour and then something had been done with it. So therefore, you could say that even in the ground form, it would go bari priya adama, because that's what it was really grown for. It wasn't grown to be used as it comes off the stalk, as it comes out of the ground. It was grown to be used in this way. But the Chatam Sofer says he doesn't think it's true. He thinks that people grow it in the original form to be used for birds. You can throw it as bird seed, bird feed, right? Or various birds. If there's birds, you can fatten ducks or geese with it, right? Because they can eat it, and they eat it in its own way. And it's and even people sometimes down in their place today, I think a lot of people eat corn in its original form, but apparently where he's writing from, where the man writing to him from, where he knew of it, they didn't generally have people did that. It was seen as an animal. For my father, Allah Hashalom, told me some joke that I never understood about people assuming that corn was ma'achal behema, was really only meant to be eaten by animals, and therefore if people ate it, it was like a whole different thing. So the Chatam Sofer is saying something like that. He's saying that in its original form, corn as grown is only for animals, and then some people al hatchak, but the general way that people eat it is to grind it into a flour and to use it in that way. Therefore, you might have thought... So, even though you might have thought you'd make a pari adama, you make a shahakol, he thinks, because it's really generally used in the original form for animals, stuff like that. But then he raises another interesting thing that makes me wonder whether Turkish advice really is corn, even though that's what I found online. He says, so it could be you're going to write to me, if you know better, grothst@gmail.com, and tell me another Turkish, if there is something called Turkish wheat, but that's real wheat. So I don't know if that's what I found. So if you know better, please feel free to write me and let me know. But he says he has one more problem. It would be a shakol as long as it's actually a kidney oat. But he's not sure, and he quotes a Chok Yaakov who said it was a kidney oat, and we have a general principle that he mentioned, Shelo Yu'uneg Letzadik Kol Aven, that tzaddikim don't make mistakes. But he means it's not that they're perfect. He means that Hashem helps them not make mistakes so they don't say the wrong thing because they're tzaddikim and they're trying to do their best. But the Chatam Sofer says he's not sure why we're so clear that it's not a type of ores, that it's not an extension of rice, which doesn't make sense for corn to me. And if that were true, he says, and maybe it is the kind of thing that if you mix it with wheat, it gets pulled in so much that you make an actual bread of it. And that makes some sense because even if it's corn, because cornbread, once you mix in the wheat, does really become a much better bread than many other cereals and things and grains and legumes and whatever it is else you might think of as kidney oat. And therefore, maybe you should pick a barbecue because it's a kind of a rice. And He mentioned that Marami Lublin had that question about titarki, which is a term that I couldn't find at all. But Marami Lublin thought that titarki was also a kind of orez. And if it is, he says, all the more so that there's Turkish Shavites, which might be maize. And he says, and I spoke to a TV echad, which I believe me, it's what we would call a scientist today, somebody who knows about these laws of nature, who said that if you look at this Turkish Shavites, it has a lot of leavening power to it, and therefore, so it's not one of the five grains, right? It doesn't have that, it doesn't turn into bread as easily as the five grains, and that's true of corn as well. But it's also true that when you try to let it leaven into something, it doesn't just go bad, it has some of that quality to it, and like rice, it gets pulled along. So he says, I'm not sure that maybe halachically it qualifies as a kind of a rice. And if that would be true, then even if there's no wheat present, you'd make a bar mitzvah like rice. And he says, don't tell me that you grow it only for the birds, as he said before, because that's only a bar mitzvah versus shahakol issue. But is a bar mitzvah note, if it's a rice, if it's halachically a rice form, he doesn't mean it's genetically a rice form. He doesn't mean that it's of the rice family. He means that it has many of the qualities that the Gemara applies to orez, and if that's true, then it should have many of the brachot issues of orez, of what we call rice, not because it is a rice, but because it's enough like rice in those terms. And therefore, since I don't have a perfect answer for this question, I'm not sure what to tell you, he suggests, and this is a kind of a halachic caution, that I've met people who say they don't like halakha kashrut, but he's saying we don't really know the answer to the question. He said better to eat it in the middle of a meal, meaning when you've already made another bracha to cover all the parts of the meal. I think he means try to have a little bit of bread, even though you don't generally have a lot of bread, have a little bit of bread or have something else that covers all those bracha, right? Make some kind of mizonon on something else, add a shahakol, and then you can have this and not worry about it. So that's his recommendation, but along the way to coming to basically a non-answer, he raises all sorts of interesting issues for us. Then very briefly, because I like when we have opportunities to meet new poskim, and we don't get to meet Rav Shmuel Levi Vosner very often, because his Sheneva Levi in the ones that I find is often very brief, Chivor, very brief responsa. So here, with just a couple of minutes left, we have in Chilek Yud, the 10th volume, Simon Lamed Aleph, the chapter 31, he says, on the 3rd of Tevet of Shin Zion, 1946, right, just the very end of 1946, 30 Tevet, he says, somebody wrote to him or asked him about that a person who was reading the Haftorah made a mistake. It was the second Shabbos of Hanukkah, and the man read the Haftorah for Miketz. And then when people said to him about that he made a mistake, he was reading the wrong Haftorah, they rolled the Navi, meaning this was a shul where they read the Haftorah from a scroll, and the Haftorah for Miketz and the Haftorah for the second Shabbos of Hanukkah are from the same Navi. So he just rolled it back, L'siman Zion, this is in Malachim Aleph, and it's about Vayas Chirom. And so the person talking to Rav Vosner was unclear about whether he has to make the bracha on the Haftorah again. Because in terms of Kriyas HaTorah, if you showed the person who had gotten Aliyah the wrong place in the Torah, he made a bracha on it, we would say, nope, you got to make the bracha again because you had the wrong place in the Torah in mind. So the person asking Rav Vosner the question said, maybe it's here it's different because he actually meant to say the right bracha. He thought that the Navi was open to the right place, the Haftorah is Chanukah. So maybe the bracha, maybe it's right. Maybe it's okay and the bracha is valid. So Rav Vosner says, there's a Beit Ephraim, there's a Shari Ephraim. Beit Ephraim was he calls him a Gadol HaDorot. Shari Ephraim, Beit Ephraim. Who was Ephraim Zalman Margoliot, born in Brod, Poland, which is the Western Ukraine, in 1762. Shari Ephraim is on the laws of Torah readings. He has a Mate Ephraim on the laws of the High Holidays. Yad Ephraim is no commentators of Shulchan Aruch. And Shut Beit Ephraim, and he passed away in Brod in 1828. So he had said, if you have Rosh Chodesh on Shabbos, then you don't make the Haftorah, you don't read the Haftorah for that week, you read the Haftorah of HaShemayim Kisi, the Haftorah for Rosh Chodesh. So he says, if the person made a mistake, and he read the Haftorah for that week's Haftorah instead, so if he didn't make a bracha afterwards, then the Shari Ephraim rules, he should just read HaShemayim Kisi, and then make the bracha afterwards. In other words, you don't have to go back, you don't have to make a bracha again. All you do is you add in HaShemayim Kisi, and then you make your ending brachos. And if you made the ending brachos already, you might think, well, he's completed his reading the Haftorah, and it was the wrong Haftorah. He paskins, you just read HaShemayim Kisi, the right Haftorah, without a bracha. And he says that's because normally we don't jump from one Navi to the other, and here you would be jumping because there's no guarantee that the first Haftarah that the person read for Parashat HaShavua was in Yeshayahu, which where Hashar and Kisid is from. Nonetheless, says the Beit Ephraim in Shari Ephraim, he says, but that wasn't an obligatory Haftarah that day at all, so therefore it sort of falls away and doesn't count. You can just read Hashemayim Kisi. So says Rav Vosner, in our case, there's two things. First of all, you're not going from one Navi to the other because they're both in Malachim, both the Haftarah for Miketz and the Haftarah for the second Shabbos of Chalakah, same Halakha, same, are in the same book of Navi, and therefore you're okay. And also, it is relevant this week because it's that with Parashas Haftarah, and we have reasons also to believe that the guy really meant to write the right Haftarah. He just got mixed up once it was open to the wrong one. And therefore, he says, the Safek Bracha, we don't generally make an extra Bracha if we don't have to. So that is two Tshuvot, one from the Chatam Sofer, one from Rav Vosner, on issues of making of which Bracha to make when we're not sure, and what to do about Bracha, those issues. And that is a responsive day for the 3rd of Tevet. Have a great day.